Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. This week's Q&A with Layla Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin works with me on a daily basis solving patients' problems, and we're here today to answer your questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the place to send your questions. We'll answer them on the air if they are appropriate. So what's our next question, Layla?
Okay, our next question comes from Tina in New York. She writes, though I have no symptoms, tests show that I have a urinary infection, Escherichia coli.
This is one of the reasons I went to medical school. Okay,
there you go.
Wait, hold on. Wait a minute. I'm having problems. E. coli or Escherichia coli?
Yeah.
Which is what you said.
Which is what you said, yeah, okay.
Right. It's been a long time since I've said that, though.
Yeah.
In fairness.
So Tina says she can't take any of the antibiotics to kill it, and the doctor said to try 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day instead.
Wow.
She's taking vitamin C. Also, she's
That's an interesting doctor. The doctor says the antibiotics won't help and take vitamin C instead?
No, she says she can't take any of the antibiotics to kill it. So she must have another reason that she can't take it. She probably doesn't tolerate it.
She's intolerant to the antibiotics. Okay.
Yeah, but I'm glad that the doctor said to try 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C. And she's taking that. She's also drinking cranberry juice. She's not sure that'll work. Anything else I can do?
Great question. Well, the problem, as you know, Layla, with cranberry juice is that it's high in sugar, so that's not
true.
Great. So what we suggest is not cranberry juice, but cranberry concentrate. Mm-hmm. I think it works, I think, a little better than the pills, although you can buy cranberry concentrate pills. But there's cranberry concentrate by a company called Hain, which is very tart. You know, it's really kind of...
You could cut it with some water so you're not puckering and salivating.
It's like you take a shot glass, like a little whiskey shot glass, and you use, that's about an ounce, and then you can dilute that about, threefold with water, and drink that three or four times a day, best away from meals, and that will actually rinse out your bladder and prevent the adherence of the bacteria to the wall. The vitamin C trick, what that will do is it will somewhat acidify your urine, which seems to be helpful. Mm-hmm. And the vitamin C itself, I'm not sure it's that likely to kill the E. coli. But the other thing you can do, and this is one of our favorite tricks, which we, let's give credit where credit is due. This has actually been popularized by Dr. Jonathan Wright, the fantastic holistic physician in Washington State. He has a great newsletter, the Dr. Wright newsletter, and he's popularized the use of something called D-mannose, which is amazing. I mean, it works for a lot of our patients. We have patients who have real serious bladder problems. They have neurological problems which cause them to retain urine, like with multiple sclerosis and various other conditions. And when they take D-mannose, usually they have to take about a half teaspoon three or four times a day with water. And it doesn't taste bad. It's actually sweet tasting. It's a form of sugar, but it's not a caloric sugar. And it rinses the bladder. It seems to prevent the adherence of the, especially E. coli, to little sticking points on the bladder wall. So it, in effect, rinses out the bladder, and that can work. Go ahead.
I just want to mention some of the sources of E. coli. If you're a big eater of chicken, non-organic chicken, conventional chicken, that may be a source of E. coli because there's so many different types of antibiotics used, or so much antibiotic use among chicken, that there's now a multi-drug-resistant strain, if you will, of E. coli that's presenting as a lot of UTI.
Wow, I didn't know that.
In women, which is a little bit disturbing.
Well, it makes sense because anatomically, that area of the body is not too far distant from the, where the stool, is eliminated. Mm-hmm. And there may be some cross-contamination. And often, you can actually give women probiotics, and by changing their intestinal bacteria, they actually have less urinary tract infections, although there's no way that oral probiotic goes into the urinary tract. It just goes in the gastrointestinal tract, but there's a lot of association between the GI tract and the urinary tract.
Absolutely. They're all neighbors.
Yeah, they're neighbors, right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, other tips, I mean, for women who are sexually
other
active?
Other tips, you know, personal hygiene, always wipe front to back.
Right.
After sexual intercourse is a good time to urinate.
Not too romantic. Because it's like, it interrupts the cuddle. It's like, where'd you go? It's like, well, you know, I'm doing...
No, then you rush back for the cuddle. It's okay.
Okay, but then it's, you know, what I'm saying is, you know, please, you can invoke our names, you know, when to your sexual partner. And say, Dr. Hoffman and Layla said I should do this. It's like, I'm only doing what they said. And, you know, but cuddles are appropriate afterwards. So, yeah, that's helpful. You know, in women who postmenopausally have a lot of infections, a little bit of estrogen locally can help because it nourishes the tissue, not just in the vagina, but also in the nearby urethra. And women postmenopausally often get more infections because their tissue weakens without the influence of estrogen. So, you know, some local estrogen cream that can be given to you by your OBGYN, or, you know, I give it to women in our practice who have a lot of urinary tract infections. Even systemic estrogen replacement therapy will strengthen the bladder. I really think there's a role for allergy here. I mean, I think that...
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So tell us about that.
Allergy, another source of inflammation. Sometimes these UTIs or UTI-type symptoms are triggered by allergy to food.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something we would also look at.
Right.
Absolutely. And to also make a distinction between urinary tract infection and maybe interstitial cystitis.
Right, because that's just inflammation that's sterile without a bacterial cause. But it causes the same symptoms, which is the symptoms of urgency and discomfort. And, you know, that's part of the problem. So other things that could be helpful, Uva-Ursi is helpful for bladder infections. The problem with Uva-Ursi is that it cannot be used for more than 10 days. I don't think it should be used for a long period of time because it can be toxic. But it is good bladder disinfectant. And, you know, there are other natural herbal ingredients that are helpful for urine. So some naturopaths and herbalists recommend various types of concoctions. And also we like olive leaf as a general natural disinfectant for the body.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
absolutely. That's an excellent idea.
One of our favorite products available at drhoffman.com. I use it for a lot of different types of infections. So there you have it. And, you know, good luck.
Best of luck to Tina. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Next, we have a question from Veronica. Oh, hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. My husband and I are avid fans of you and your podcast. Dr. Hoffman, you offer some great advice.
Her husband's name is Archie? I'm joking.
Jughead, no.
Right, no.
Right. She says, Veronica says, we have stopped taking this tremendous probiotic that you often recommend, worried about the radiation coming out of Japan.
Mm-hmm.
She says, Dr. O'Hara sites used to give updates on the monitoring, but recently this has stopped. I don't know what to make of this. Any insights or what are your recommendations?
Well, let me just say that, you know, Dr. O'Hara, correct pronunciation, is one of our sponsors, and, you know, I've been in touch with him personally. And so let me tell you why this concern over radiation in Dr. O'Hara's probiotics is really wrong on a lot of accounts. So, number one, let's start out with the fact that there was a Fukushima disaster and radiation spread over parts of Japan. And in fact, there were radiation counts that appeared over Tokyo that were concerning. Okay? And this happened a few years back, as you know. The part of Japan where Dr. O'Hara's is produced is actually even further away from the Fukushima site, which is in northern Japan. It's more in sort of south, I believe it's southwestern Japan. Fukushima's northeastern Japan. Mm-hmm. So it's even less likely to affect the Dr. O'Hara's products. The levels were at one point somewhat concerning, but what's interesting about Dr. O'Hara's products is that the product that you're getting in 2014 may have been a product that was originally started to be prepared in 2007. It takes a long time for them they have these fermenting vats there where they keep the probiotics and the prebiotics together. And it's a very, it's like making miso.
Under enormous care and nurture.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right, and very, very careful conditioning. So whatever contamination might have occurred is very unlikely to get into the Dr. O'Hara's. That's number one. So that the reason I think they stopped posting warnings is because it's sort of like, I mean, it's like me saying, you know, contrary to the rumors, I actually don't beat my wife. And I could keep repeating it. I will tell you once again. I don't beat my wife. And eventually, people say, "You know, I've heard Dr. Hoffman beats his wife." Now that would be strange because I'm not even married.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, that's how people think. So you know, it's like it. You know, Shakespeare once said, "Methinks thou doth protest too much."
Yes.
You know, and so sometimes you just kind of go, "Okay, look, we've dispelled it. It's ridiculous. Let's stop." Talking about it, but you know, maybe they need to put out another bulletin, but it's absurd to think that there's any radiation counts. Now,
yeah.
On another front, there's a lot of buzz around how, you know, currents move very slowly in the Pacific, and clearly there was a washover of the reactor, and then water went out into the Pacific. And because currents go very slowly, strange things are happening on the west coast of the United States. Debris from Fukushima years later is beginning to show up on Oregon and California coasts.
Yeah.
And the radiation plume from Fukushima is actually spreading across the Pacific. But I have to say that while it's detectable, it is of such a low magnitude. I mean, the Pacific Ocean is a really, really, really big place. You know,
yeah.
if you think any otherwise, take a little sailboat or a rowboat and try and row across it.
Yeah,
it's enormous. I mean, somebody just went across the Atlantic. God bless them. But you know, Pacific is even bigger, and there's a lot of place for that radiation to disperse. So, what kind of I find really an assault on scientific literacy is that people are very concerned about radiation in the fish and in the water, but they're not concerned about the doctors will go for your annual mammogram. You know, make sure
That's
that right. you get your CAT scan. You know, make mm-hmm. sure that you get
your screening X-rays every six months.
Yeah, and that's how we're getting exposed to lots more radiation than we should get exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And doctors are very cavalier about radiation. Also, frankly, you know, there's a little bit of a profit motive involved in testing and screening. And while they're working on improving the devices so the devices emit less radiation, there's still some devices that are around that are old-fashioned, substandard, and a lot of folks are getting exposed to too much radiation through
that,
not so much through Dr. O'Hara's probiotics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which have no radiation. I mean, first of all, there's no radiation. But, you know, even if there was a small uptick in radiation from that, almost imperceptible, it pales in comparison to the amount of radiation that we're getting from other sources.
That's true.
And from
our
cell phones and our Wi-Fis.
Oh,
my God. Don't get me started.
Yeah. We could go all into EMFs and so forth. Yeah. Yeah. So, Veronica, take your Dr. O'Hara's probiotic. It's perfectly fine.
And remember, I don't beat my wife. Once and for all, let's settle this.
Once and for all, let's settle this right here.
So, you know, I actually had this is a true story. I spoke to a doctor in New Jersey who said, "Look, I have a patient here I wanted to ask you about, but incidentally, I want to share with you that the patient was originally going to see you, Dr. Hoffman, was going to travel to Manhattan to see you, but she heard that you beat your wife." And so she came to see me and said, I have used this theme on my show of, this example. And I guess she just, she took it
That's
seriously.
That's what she heard.
So people, you know, they don't listen that well.
Mm-hmm.
True story. Mm-hmm. True story. I said, I'm not even married. So... Well, that's because then people are going to say, "Well, that's because you beat your wife, and she left you. She
right.
left you. She left you."
Exactly. Oh my goodness.
Okay.
Anyway,
I'm notorious. I've got.
There you go.
Okay. So, all right. We have any other questions?
Yeah, actually, we do. We have one from Kathleen.
Good.
She writes, "I follow the info about oils, and I know coconut and olive oil are good. I know that canola, peanut, and others are bad, but the former two oils are strongly flavored, meaning the coconut and the olive. Are there neutral tasting oils that I could use for occasional forays into baking or some other things that are best or to use and others that are not so good? All right, the coconut oil, the unrefined, extra virgin, cold-pressed coconut oil, yes, can have a coconut aroma and even somewhat of a flavor.
Right.
So people are not so thrilled about making their chicken or their rice or making, even frying their eggs in it or something.
You know, Italian food made with coconut oil just really doesn't taste right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And a lot of people do complain about the very fruity, bold nature of olive oils, and they opt for the more refined.
Yeah, which is not as healthy.
Exactly.
Because
and
the flavor is a signature of the healthy ingredients in olive oil, the healthy polyphenols. But some people, especially to an American taste, it has to be bland.
Which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
You know, when there's very, very refined olive oil in my salad, it just tastes like oil. There's not even a flavor. It's like, what is the purpose of this here? To lubricate it? What is the purpose?
Yeah.
Because there's no, Well, with the coconut oil, the same thing. If you choose for a very refined coconut oil, you're going to lose the benefits of the lauric acid, that very important saturated fat that confers its benefits by converting to monolaurin in the body, which is a very, very potent antiviral, antimicrobial. So we're losing that. But even a truly unrefined coconut oil is actually may not be good for your savory dishes, but if you're baking something, you could kind of withstand it there, the coconut flavor aroma.
Yeah.
But I would say, you know what? Make bulletproof coffee.
Right. With?
Take your coconut oil that way.
Okay. Well, actually, I have bulletproof coffee with grass-fed butter. And it's unsalted, of course, and I just keep some in the refrigerator, especially if I'm, you know, sometimes, you know, I got to go to work really early, and it will be a while before I, you know, get to have breakfast, and I'll just make some bulletproof coffee, and it actually gives you satiety for a couple hours because of the fat content. So coming back to this oil theme, you know, one of the things that Lauren Cordain points out when he analyzes what's wrong with the Western diet is that we've added too many refined oils to the diet in modern times. And in the past, people did eat nuts. People did eat, you know, some equivalent of avocados. People did have oils, but they did not take these products and squeeze the oil out of them and concentrate those oils. So, you know, when she says, well, I need it for baking, or I need it for frying, or I need it for, you know, this is actually, I mean, okay, I get it that occasionally you want to prepare something that is really savory and delicious and special. But for, I think this ought to illustrate that especially oils that are rich in omega-6 are unnatural impositions on the diet, right?
And very, very pro-inflammatory. When you think about the amount of rapeseed it takes to make, to press into a tablespoon of canola oil.
You said rapeseed.
Rapeseed.
Well, how come they call it canola oil? That's not much.
We're talking about canola oil, yeah.
Yeah.
That, it comes from rapeseed. When you think about the amount of rapeseed it would take to press a tablespoon, to extract a tablespoon of canola oil, that's a whole lot. You would never ingest it. And who's ingesting rapeseed, by the way? The same with corn and corn oil. So, and if you really think about the oil processing industry, when you learn what actually goes into it, if our audience only knew that this is done under high heat conditions with a metal catalyst, usually nickel, and once that is pressed out, and because it's a polyunsaturated fat, it's very, very volatile. So it's already semi-rancid. What you're left with is a product that doesn't smell very good, and it doesn't look very good. It's kind of a semi-gray color. Well, now guess what they have to do to it? They have to bleach it. They have to deodorize it. And that's the stuff that's in the bottle at the grocery store.
Right. And
Why do we even use this stuff? They take
out all the goodness, all the possible vitamin E, any additional healthy ingredients might be filtered out.
Right.
By the way, it's an interesting historical note is that rapeseed, that's the source of canola oil, but that's not a great name. You know, so
it's not.
So the PR guys got together and said, well, you know, we've got a problem, you know, with acceptance of this. It's called rapeseed. I mean, there's some negative connotations to rape. So let's come up with a new name. Oh, we'll call it canola, because they already had mazola. Mazola was corn oil, which is maize ola, like old oil. And canola means it actually, a lot of it comes from Canada because rapeseed is a northern oil. And a lot of it grows in, you know, I guess, Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, and so on. So they called it canola. But by the way, you know, I think people ought to select different types of oils for different purposes. So, for example, for salad dressing, occasionally I like to alternate from olive oil. I go to walnut oil, which has a really nice fragrance. Mm. Or you can use avocado oil, which has a nice, a different kind of fragrance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can become a connoisseur of these different types of oils. I use dark sesame oil for things that I want to impart an, or you know, sort of an Asian flavor to. Mm-hmm. You know, dark sesame oil with ginger is a great way to saute Chinese cabbage, and you know, you can put in, you know, whatever you want, you know, to make sort of a stir fry. But I use a lot of dark sesame oil for the Asian flavor, and for an Indonesian kind of flavor, the coconut is great, and you know, or an Indian type, you know, South Asian type of flavor. Yes. Coconut oil is really good for curry type dishes, and so you know, get used to different taste sensations because it, you know, the taste of the oil is actually a signature for the nutritional value of the oils. And go easy on the oils, and really go easy on the oils. Yeah.
And I, just another note for Kathleen, if you're still bothered by, you know, if you can't use the right oil and you're going to use a much more refined oil, which is not very healthy, consider your cooking methods. You know, maybe instead of fry, you need to roast. Instead of sautéing, maybe you need to braise in a little bit of water and then top it with a better quality oil or something like that. More steaming, more poaching, more boiling, more roasting, less frying and less broiling. We're better off, you know, in reevaluating our cooking methods above all.
And on a final note, you know, one of the things that we measure in people, we don't just measure their levels of omega-3 in their blood, because mm-hmm. that's one way of measuring. You can just say, well, how much omega-3 is in the blood? Is it, you know, is it absent? Is it medium? Is it high? We actually measure the ratio, the 3-6 ratio. And so there's two ways you can improve your health. One is to increase your omega-3 by taking omega-3 supplements. Another is to simply reduce your omega-6 and you'll improve your ratio. It's actually not the amount of omega-3, it's the ratio. So if you're consuming tons of omega-6, you might mitigate that by taking fish oil pills, but you're not really going to achieve the optimal ratio unless you curtail your intake of the omega-6 oils.
Yeah, and let's tell them why. It's because the two oils compete for the enzymatic process. And the omega-6s, if there's enough of them in the body, they will win.
Yeah.
So it is true that we do have to reduce the amount of omega-3 inflammatory oils that we're taking in the first place. Mm-hmm. Standard American diet, the ratio of 6 to 3 is like 20 to 1, even 50 to 1 if your diet is terrible.
Right.
But according to Lauren Cordain, it should be more like 2 to 1, 1 to 1, maybe as much as 4 to 1, but more like 2 to 1, if anything.
Great.
So, yeah.
All right. So that, I think, pretty much is all the time we have for today's Q&A with Layla. If we have any additional questions, we can carry them over till next time. And we invite you to send your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, and we'll put them in the hopper for next week's edition of Q&A with Layla. So until then, I'll see you in the office, Layla. And, and the rest of you, we'll see you on the radio. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.